I'll get back to more of my conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis in just a moment, the author of Alliance of Evil, and we will open up the phone calls, or open up the phone lines at the bottom of the hour, questions and comments about the possibility that we are staring a new dual Cold War in the face, and could it lead to events that open the door for the biblical end times? We'll get to all that in a moment. Just a reminder also, at the top of the next hour, our Open Lines segment begins for 2 hours. A creepy piece of footage from a family in Ireland seems to show some kind of figure momentarily appear on a baby monitor. In the video, a couple are setting up the device so they can keep an eye on their baby. As the husband remotely adjusts the camera so it shows his wife's face, he is stunned to see what appears to be someone's head poke out of a doorway behind his wife. After unleashing a bewildered cry, the man runs into the room to track down the oddity, but finds that there is no one there except for his wife and the baby. Nonetheless, he insists that he saw something, and some online viewers agree, suggesting the anomaly was some kind of entity or perhaps even a ghost. You can read all about it, see the video for yourself in the highlight carousel up at Coast to Coast AM, where our webmaster Sean Latasore has posted that and many other tasty little tidbits. All right. Let's get back into Alliance of Evil on the other side here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie, coming to you live from Coast Toronto, Canada, affiliate In-Depth Radio News Talk 1010. Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis stays with us. The book is Alliance of Evil, Russia, China, the United States, and a new Cold War. Has the mystery of the end times finally arrived? There have been obviously, some altercations with the Russians, particularly, I wouldn't call them Russian regular troops. These are more like mercenaries in Syria. The United States has certainly encountered or had heated battles with them. There have been some near collisions in the South China Sea with Chinese vessels. How do you see this, or what is the danger of this breaking out into all-out war, and perhaps, as you point out, morphing into the unfathomable, an end time scenario?
Well, certainly the confrontations are on the uptick, Richard. You know, we had one here recently with the USS Decatur, a destroyer, in the Graven Reefs in the South China Sea. The Chinese warship came only a few meters away from it. And just in the last day, we've had a couple of B-52s that have flew over the contested area in the South China Sea. People need to understand that these islets, 3,400 acres that the Chinese have militarized with cruise missiles and air defense weapons, and have created not only harbors for their warships, but also for their jet fighters and their bombers that they practice from. That these are claimed by the Vietnamese, the Taiwanese, as well as the Filipinos. And they're 660 miles or in that range south of China. So this is not just, next door to them. It's really in the middle of that sea. But these confrontations are on the increase. We've had a lot in the South China Sea, East China Sea. The Russians are being very provocative at sea and in the air, as I've indicated. And, of course, they have their neighbors to the west terrified to the point that the Polish Prime Minister has called for giving the U.S. $2 billion to forward station armor brigades so that they can be prepared in case the Russians do what they did in Ukraine or Crimea or the Republic of Georgia, which is a concern. And you mentioned the mercenaries. Yes, back in February of this year, we killed a couple hundred. And it's interesting, we have a hotline with the Russian military in Syria, and we called them and said, are these your troops? And they said, no. And so we killed them. And that's the nature of mercenaries, but they were there to represent the Assad regime. And, of course, the Russians wiped their hands of that, even though we know where they came from and what they did.
Well, Syria. Obviously, that looms large in any end time scenario. Is that the most likely flashpoint, as far as you're concerned?
At this point, it certainly is a flashpoint. I would argue that, if you got into, say, Ezekiel 38, that we're really talking the Gog and Magog, and that Magog could be the country of, say, Turkey. I know it's interesting. A friend of mine spoke with General, now President, El-Sisi of Egypt, who told him less than a year ago that he thought that Erdogan, who is the current president of Turkey, is really seeks to be the caliph and to establish a caliphate. And his statements have been very, very conducive to that interpretation, not only within the region, but, the release of the American pastor Brunson here recently was after great pressure we put on him, Erdogan, to cooperate with us. But yet we find that he's traveling all over the world. He was just 2 weeks ago in, of all places, Kern, Cologne, Germany. What was he doing there? Yeah, he was doing a state visit, but he was also dedicating a mosque. Now, that's not very typical of presidents of countries going across the world doing that sort of thing. But this guy has, and he consistently has had over the years, very ambitious thoughts about the reemergence of the Ottoman Empire. He is a neo-Ottoman, and I don't think anyone that follows him closely would dispute that. So these are issues. Syria is, clearly something that Erdogan is watching. He's collaborating with the Russians, who are, of course, even though there's some friction there, they are working together. And, of course, they're working against the likes of Riyadh, but they're collaborating as well with Iran, who has a lot of forces, especially Quds forces there near Damascus, and operating even drones threatening northern Israel. So when you kind of put the picture together, you see the Iranians, certainly the Turks are sort of allies, the Russians and the Chinese, yes, are beginning to show up in even Syria, hoping to kind of lick their chops and put together that country once a declaration of peace can be found and they can find a political solution. So a lot of players here, a confused battlefield, but I clearly see Syria as part of this long-term agenda.
You mentioned Erdogan, and I wanted to ask you about Turkey. Do they belong in NATO even at this point?
You know, that's a fair question. I don't think so. My concern would be, one, if you go back to 2003, we tried to put our 4th Division through Turkey into northern Iraq through Mosul to attack Saddam. A good ally would have allowed that to happen. Of course, Erdogan didn't want that to happen, and they blocked us, and we ended up having to take all those troops through the Suez, up through the Gulf, into Kuwait. Erdogan has not been cooperating. Of course, they purchased the S-400s, surface-to-air missiles from the Russians. They're being pretty cozy with the Russians of late. They even purchased a long-term nuclear power plant on the Med from the Russians. And of course, as we've seen elsewhere, as soon as you have an operational power plant, much like they have in downtown Tehran and on the coastlines there, then you can begin to make plutonium, and that puts you on a glide path to having a nuclear capability. And I think that's what Erdogan wants, ultimately.
Well, it's just too rich. So the Turkey is buying air defense systems that would be, at least under the umbrella of NATO, ostensibly used to protect NATO from Russian missiles.
Yes. And that, because we will not connect our Patriots and other THAADs to a Russian S-400. That's why there's a... It's a non sequitur. We just won't do it. And that is a major bone of contention. And, of course, there are others. Even though we've tried to maintain good relations with the Turks, and up until now, subsequent to the 1930s when Ataturk tried to secularize that nation, Erdogan is doing just the opposite, trying to radicalize it with his Islamic viewpoint and trying to return to the grandeur of the Ottoman Empire. So NATO, no. I don't think that they should be a member of NATO. You know, NATO is such a complex thing for us today, as we mentioned in the last hour, because, you know, anyone could, you know, call for an Article 5, say, you know, the Russians are picking on me. Please come to my rescue. Do we want to be tethered in the future war world to that? Well, you know, we have that alliance, but keep in mind, I have no doubt that the Russians and the Chinese are just, you know, very tight now out of necessity. They don't want to be contained by us, and I don't know that we can contain them. But they want to form their own little alliance, and to a certain degree, this Belt and Road strategy of President Xi around the world and collaboration with the Russians and military exercises, this is all painting a picture where you can see a divided world emerging. So to abandon NATO, even though it has all sorts of, you know, warts and problems with it, at this point might not be well advised, but certainly allowing Turkey into our secrets, into our systems with a Russian-made air defense system is not a good idea either.
Now, far from me to stand up for the House of Saud, but given that so much of the narrative of the Khashoggi murder has come from the Turks and also Qatar, another sort of sworn enemy of Saudi Arabia, is it possible, do you think there's anything to the idea that Qatar, Turkey are trying to drive a wedge between the United States and their allies, the Saudis, with this?
Well, of course. You know, that's the sort of thing that, you know, kind of the poker in the geopolitical world that takes place all the time behind the scenes. You know, who were the people that were in the, you know, the Saudi embassy that night? I suppose some details will eventually come out. But the clandestine type of operations, you know, from one nation to another, or perhaps not nation states, but other activities, take place, unfortunately, all the time. You know, we're in a tight spot. What can President Trump do? He can sanction entities and individuals. Even if Khashoggi was, you know, demonstrated to have been murdered, as it would appear to be, by henchmen that were under the, you know, leadership of Salman, don't know, but that could be. Clearly, we could cancel the arms deal, but, I mean, we've been not only $110 billion, it's far in excess of that, and we have a lot of people on the ground working hand in glove with them, but we risk our relationship with the Saudis against Iran. And, of course, the Saudis, interestingly, are aligned with Pakistan. Pakistan has nuclear weapons. And the PACs are, of course, distanced from us, now aligned with the Chinese. So you've got to look at second and third order effects of any decision geopolitically in that part of the world. Otherwise, you end up with no one that you can go to and work with, given your vested interests. And, of course, the Yemen situation, we've been helping them a great deal, the Riyadh government, and trying to battle the Houthis and others, and of course, the Iranians, you know, through proxies in that part of the world. I wish it were simple. It's not simple. The world's divided. And, of course, as we see this, what I call the alliance of evil, Russia and China, using the mechanisms behind the scenes through a variety of proxies, not just the North Koreans and the Iranians, but others, I think Erdogan is going to be one of those proxies to a certain degree, even though he would like to think that he can rule the Muslim world. I think the Chinese have a better idea for him.
If you were in John Bolton's position, you had the president's ear, who knows, maybe you do, but what would you be advising? How is this, how do we counteract this? How do we step back from the brink of war?
Well, I do believe that Bolton will talk to his counterpart about renewing New START, which expires in 2021. We've got to do that. It's in neither country's best interest to not have an agreement that is enforceable. The problem is, and the Russians know this, that the 1987 INF treaty was violated with their own cruise missiles. And, you know, they probably will admit that behind the scenes. We've done a lot of in the open. So I think that we'll get something. I know that, you know, the hint was from Trump after he met with Putin in Helsinki in July that, you know, they did talk about that issue. And Putin's a realist. You know, yeah, he has grandiose ideas, but the fact that he can meet with the world's leader on the West, Trump, you know, in the eyes of the Russian people means that they are great power again. And of course, you know, Putin's meetings with President Xi on a frequent basis just solidifies that viewpoint. So if I were Bolton, and I'm pretty, you know, I've talked to John Bolton before, and so I kind of have a sense that that's what he's going to do. You know, he's a real pragmatist, he's a tough guy, but he does have the president's ear, and I think that that's going to be the top of the agenda. And of course, he'll probably try to deal with the issues in Syria and with Erdogan. And of course, the Iranians. The Iranians are our problem for Israel. We have no question, I think, after Netanyahu, you know, revealed months ago, you know, those volumes and volumes of evidence regarding their nuclear programs. We don't acknowledge a lot of things, but I suspect that there's good reason to believe the Iranians are up to no good.
If there were to be regime change in Iran, and hopefully that will come about by the Iranian people, just getting fed up with the situation and chasing the mullahs out of there. If Iran were to become sort of a secular, non-aligned nation, or, you know, again, leaning to the West as they did for many, many decades, how would that change the situation? Because obviously what's going on in Syria is it's not about a civil war, it's about a proxy war, and it's about Iran. So if Iran has regime change, how does that change the equation?
Well, if you don't have the Ayatollah running, you know, the military and their diplomacy out, you know, to promote their Shia worldview and the autocratic worldview of the mullahs, then I think that you find that they're not involved with the Houthis, they're not involved with Assad, they're less involved with Russia except because of economic interests, and perhaps even to a certain degree with China. And it's the problem is the age-old tension between the Sunni and the Shia, you know, Riyadh and Tehran, is going to continue. But if they're not involved in, you know, in fueling terrorism such as Hezbollah in, you know, southern Lebanon, and, you know, encouraging Hamas in, you know, Palestine and so forth, then, you know, we'll have an easier way in that part of the world. We can work with them. The Iranians are wonderful people. They're very bright, capable Persian people, and they have a long history. I would hope that they will replace their autocrats with people that have a better sense of history and where they ought to be going. But we're not going to eliminate all that tension, unfortunately.
Well, another fallout from that, or a positive aspect of that, might be liberalizing Saudi Arabia, because before the Iranian Revolution, I think Saudi Arabia was far more liberal, but the Wahhabists were sort of seen as a countermeasure to the Shia influence. So maybe we'll see some positive effects in Saudi Arabia as well. Here's Van Morrison taking us into the break with Van Lo's Stairway. We'll open up the phone lines, questions and comments for Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis when Coast to Coast continues right after this. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. We will get back to our conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis in just a moment as we continue to talk about the dual Cold War, the United States pitting itself against Russia and China. Your phone calls, questions, comments upcoming. Back with more of Alliance of Evil when Coast to Coast continues right after this. Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis is with us. Before we go to the phones, Bob, let me ask you. The last 3 years, well, projecting into next year, the Trump administration has earmarked approximately $2.2 or $2.3 billion in increased defense spending. We had $716 billion a couple of years ago, $705 billion, I think, last year, and another $700 billion coming up this year. Is that enough? I mean, a lot of that obviously is going to salaries and so forth, but is it enough?
You know, half of it, you're right, does go to salaries, and that's why people often say, well, gosh, you know, how can the Russians and the Chinese be such an adversary and competitive with us? Well, they hide most of what they're spending on their own national security. You know, the answer is we'll see. The concern is, you know, this past week the president came and said we're going to, all parts of the U.S. government must cut 5%. Well, we went through this sequestration period in which it just crippled our readiness, our ability to go out and train, to be ready to fight, to replace, you know, with, you know, new aircraft, these antiques that we're trying to fly around the world, the same thing with ships. You know, it's incredibly expensive to have an armed forces. And, you know, it reminded me of something that Ronald Reagan said, you know, and this was, you know, obviously a few years ago. And basically he says that if you want to be free, you have to be willing basically to pay the price. And the price in this case is to have a modern armed force that nobody's going to seek to contest. Well, today we're being contested seriously on all fronts by both China and Russia, especially combined as they're forming a new alliance. And so if we don't sustain, as you know, the chiefs of staff and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Joe Dunford, if we don't sustain the investment in long-term capabilities, then we're going to fall behind. We're already falling behind in terms of hypersonics and artificial intelligence, even in the investment in our Blue Water Navy. The last couple of years have been great. It's only putting us on a right glide path if we can sustain it.
Let's say hello to Steve, west of the Rockies in Las Vegas. Good evening, good morning, Steve. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you very much. Robert, you were talking about the Chinese tapping our electronics for information. Well, what I'm really concerned about is, what if the Chinese have programmed an end date into all of these electronic chips so that everything shuts down at the same time sometime in the future? You know, it sounds a little paranoid, but I think it's very feasible, and that's really something major that could happen.
Great question, Steve. Is that possible, Bob?
Well, I'm not an electronics expert. However, I do understand the question, and I share the concern. And that's something that I think that Jim Mattis, our defense secretary, is concerned about, that things like that could undermine the complexity of our systems. And if we get programmable and reversible, indated electronics aboard our satellites or our missiles or our aircraft or our ships and so forth, and we could find that this could be catastrophic. So, you know, I think there's plenty of caution today. There's a wake-up call across certainly the U.S. military, and I think our allies are joining that understanding that this is a very new world that we're facing, and we have to be very careful of the type of equipment that we do embrace. And so this is, I don't think it's out of the possibility.
It reminds me of, was there the U.S., was it a spy plane that was held in China for some time? I think there was maybe a near collision involved, I'm wondering if that might be what we're talking about here. Perhaps it landed there because of being hacked into somehow.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the sort of thing that we are very concerned about. Cyber, the battleground, cyber is one of the four that I point out in Alliance of Evil and go into great detail as to, and not only the threat, you know, of taking down our own infrastructure, hacking into our elections, and doing all sorts of things that we hear about every day. This is an existential threat to us. And in fact, when you look at the president's strategy, he says that there's a possibility that we would respond to a cyber attack with a nuclear weapon. That's how serious it is today. And yet, you know, there's so much we don't know. So, you know, could someone take down an aircraft? Could they take down a satellite? Could they take down a, you know, Los Angeles? I think all that is possible if we don't put firewalls and the capabilities to prevent this in place.
Wildcard Line Don is in Kent, Ohio. Don, good evening, good morning, welcome to Coast.
Brother Robert, happy Sabbath. And Lieutenant Colonel, I really appreciate your service, your patriotism, and your wisdom. During the meetings that you have, do they ever consider the Bible prophecy of Daniel 8, where America will attack Iran and destroy it?
You'd have to remind me of in Daniel 8 where you're looking at, Don. I understand perhaps where you're coming from. I don't know that that's something that we would do unless we perceive that the threat was against, you know, our key allies and against our interests.
Yeah, in verse 5, it claims that, you know, the he goat from the west will come upon the whole face of the earth and will not touch the ground, and it'll destroy the ram that has the two horns. It says the latter horn is the bigger horn that comes up last, and the first horn would be Iraq. That's already been conquered, but the last horn that comes up will be destroyed, and it claims that no one will help. It says that, you know, the nation that comes from the west will not touch the ground, which means it's going to be a naval or an air force attack. Iran is, you know, a huge country in that. Right. But it also states that no one will come to her aid. And I find that kind of interesting, since it has, you know, alliances, you know, with actually North Korea, China, and Russia. And this is a dual application prophecy also. I know Alexander the Great conquered it, but he did not use anything but an infantry, probably a column 100 and some yards wide, did not cover the whole earth, as, you know, explained in, you know, this prophecy. So, and actually it also mentions that the he-goat from the west will have her, has the wings of an eagle. And those wings will be plucked, and I have to stand up as a man. So I didn't know if the Joint Chiefs considered any of those biblical prophecies in their summation of this whole incident over there.
Great question, Don. Bob, what say you?
Yeah, I understand, you know, where Don's coming from. The eagle, certainly, you know, we like to think of as the United States, and it's used elsewhere, even in Revelation. The possibility of interpreting it like that, you know, I tend to, you know, shy away from eisegesis and going more in the direction of exegesis in terms of, you know, what's the context of that particular scripture. I have not studied Daniel 8 to the degree that Don would, you know, benefit from an analysis of that. So I really can't answer the question, though I would say that, it's not my experience that our chiefs of the armed forces are terribly biblically literate and therefore are in tune with Bible prophecy. Not that they shouldn't be, but I just don't get the sense that they are, and certainly the material I read doesn't suggest that they have.
Susan is on the wild card line, and she's in Springfield, Massachusetts. Susan, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
I'm having a problem in where I live about alternate radio shows and picking up a different subject topic about covert actions involving the U.S. and other governments, and you never talked about it. You went to something else. I'm just wondering, are there two radio shows?
I'm not sure what station you're listening to, Susan, and what you're hearing, but this is Coast to Coast, and for the last, well, nearly 2 hours, we've been talking with Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis. So did you have a question for Bob?
Yeah, well, what about those covert activities that the U.S. government was involved with other governments?
Can you narrow that down a little bit?
That's what I'd like to know. It was, you know, you were supposed to go to that topic, and there was a break, and when you came back, you talked about something else.
Well, I'm not sure. Did I forget to follow up on a thread, Bob? I don't know that. I don't remember us talking about covert operations. But, well, I mean, how do we tackle that one? I mean, all countries are involved in covert operations. That's why you have an intelligence apparatus. All countries do it. They do it against each other. It's just part of, you know, reality.
It is part of governing a country and protecting a country's vital interests around the globe. You know, the concern on any covert activities is how is it going to be controlled, governed? What we don't need are rogue agents doing things in the name of our government that, you know, the national leadership is not aware of. And we've had a colored history in that regard, where we've done things certainly the U.S. is not proud of, but every nation has been involved in covert activities. The things that I know I don't talk about. We need national leaders that clearly understand the sobering reality of the powers that they exercise, and they need to do it with eyes wide open, with our national interests involved, and do it in a way as humanely as possible. What we did in the wake of 9/11, in which, you know, allegedly, I'll use these words, that we took captive certain individuals that were threatening the United States. And, of course, we've incarcerated some in Guantanamo, been there, and elsewhere, perhaps black sites around the world. Those are covert activities. Were they in the national interest? Well, the Bush administration thought so. Others disagreed. But nations do these sorts of things, and they have to protect themselves.
Is it fair to say that countries have no friends, they only have interests?
Absolutely.
All right, Susan, thank you for that. Let's say hi to Wayne is in Chicago on the Wildcard Line. Wayne, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you, Mr. Surratt. You always have interesting topics. Thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you.
Just a few comments, and then I have a question at the end. We promised Boris Yeltsin that we would not advance east, no way, no how. That's all we've been doing ever since. The countries you mentioned earlier, like Poland, Romania, Hungary, the Baltic states, we're just pouring weapons and troops into those countries. We're even in Norway. So we're trying to surround Russia on all sides. And what do we expect the response to be when we are surrounding them on all sides? The thing about Russia, they did not take Crimea. The Crimean people agreed. 97.1% of them agreed to join Russia because they didn't want anything to do with the Ukrainian government. It's a fascist government supported by the United States. Iran, Mossadegh, 1953, the president, we got rid of him because he had the audacity to want to keep his oil for his own people. So we are the ones who are the purveyors of destruction with selling weapons around the world, trying to be the world's policeman. And, you know, it's just a bad situation. What do you think, sir? But my question is, why do we call all these other countries evil? Ronald Reagan said the evil empire, Russia. George W. Bush, Iraq, Iran, North Korea, the axis of evil. Now your book is saying evil, but we are the ones perpetrating evil around the world, spreading these weapons of destruction everywhere. Even in Syria, Assad did not do one chemical attack against his people, yet we're still lying, saying that he did. So what's your response, sir?
Yeah, well,
a lot of questions in there.
Richard, it is perspective. I think that the history of the Russian Soviet Union, certainly where they killed millions under Mao, and China where they killed millions, and their foreign policy where they provoked all sorts of proxy wars, the types of values that they support. We do sell weapons. Our Defense Security Cooperation Agency, you know, has done a robust year this year, double what we did last year. We have made mistakes with some of our alliances and the like. We've helped topple governments perhaps in the past and did it for our own national interests. And I think what you said moments ago, Richard, is absolutely correct, and that is we don't have any friends. We just have interests. And those interests are going to shift from time to time, given what the United States needs to secure itself and to prosper. Sometimes in the eyes of the beholder, it's evil. Certainly in my perspective, when I label Russia and China as an alliance of evil, I look at their history and I look at what they want today, and it's certainly not what my country wants. And I do believe the United States is not perfect, but is doing some pretty good things around the world. And I tend to want to respect and care for our interests over theirs.
Particularly because, you know, people talk about democracy and how that is really what protects freedom. But it's not really democracy. It's the rule of law. Yeah. And we have the rule of law in North America, thank God, in Western civilization. But you look around at 70-80% of the rest of the world, they don't have rule of law. It is the Wild West, and there are no protections afforded to the individual. You can be literally swept off the street in the middle of the night and executed for no reason in most places in the world. And to me, that's evil.
Yeah, there are a million Muslims that are incarcerated in Western China today. And that's a UN report. Somebody can look it up here in the last week or so. Why are they doing that? Because they say that they're extremist. Well, we don't do that in the United States. Now, yes, we have the history of incarcerating Japanese under FDR. That was wrong, and we've acknowledged that. We do bad things, but the rest of the world, I've gone through, I think, 5 passports. I've been all over the world. I've seen some pretty bad places, and yet, it's always wonderful to come back home to the United States where we enjoy the rule of law. We aren't afraid, as Richard points out, of being arrested, pulled out of bed and shot in the head, or our families being carted away. And yet, unfortunately, we're seeing that elsewhere in the world. And the likes of the Chinese are doing some of that to their own people. And so the
Bob. I got to jump in here and thank you so much for spending 2 hours with us. Alliance of Evil, Russia, China, the United States, and a new Cold War. Thank you so much, Bob. Here's the Kinks, the time song taking us into the break. On the other side, 2 hours of open lines. The phone lines are yours here on Coast to Coast AM.